Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Vav, page 164. 166, I'm sorry. Page 166.
Okay, 66.
Nice.
Story up to now. Story up to now is that Lavan comes and meets Yaakov, and Yaakov, Lavan accuses Yaakov for stealing his gods. Yaakov says, whoever has it, they will die. He searches all the various tents back and forth, Rachel, Leah, Yaakov's tents, and back if he doesn't find anything. Okay. Vayicha LeYaakov, Yaakov got angry. Vayarev v'Lavan, he started arguing with Lavan for two reasons. Number one, Yaakov Avinu got angry because he couldn't imagine that Lavan is going to attack a search. Because he told him, you know, what, you can go search. So he says, Vayomer LeLavan, he says to Lavan, Mapishi Machatosi, what happened? What's my sin? What did I do wrong? Ki dalakta achare, that you chased me. Now that you saw. Now that you saw that there's nothing, that you didn't find anything, I haven't wronged you, so why are you chasing me like a person chases a thief? And then he says, Ki mishashtes kol kelai. This we learned already, just to go through it quickly, that you went through all my kelim, ma matzasa, what did you find? Mikol klei beisach, from all the vessels of your house. Did you find anything that belongs to you in my house? Simkei, whatever you did find, put it here. Neged achai v'achecha, against me and my brothers, meaning my shepherds, your shepherds, bring it out into the open and we'll see. V'yachichu ben shneim, and they'll be able to let us decide between the two of us who's guilty. So basically, very simply, Yaakov Avinu is telling Lavan, did you find anything? No. Okay? So what are you accusing me of being a thief that you chased me afterwards? And now Yaakov Avinu is continuing in he's letting out now, so to speak, his frustrations against Lavan for all these years. He said, Ze'esim shana anechi imach, I am with you 20 years already. Rechelecha ve'izecha le'kishikelu. Your goats and your she-goats never miscarried. And as I was such a good shepherd, I took care of your animals so well that they never had a miscarriage. I didn't eat any of the rams because the tradition, as Mefarshim, obviously, what's Yaakov saying? I didn't eat your rams. Why should he eat the rams? Now, normally, the tradition was that the shepherds did eat rams. What they used to do, the Mefarshim say, when the shepherds would take the sheep far away, that there wouldn't be anything to eat. They didn't have any kosher restaurants in those days, you know, or even the goyim didn't have a McDonald's that they can just go in and buy food. So what did they do? The custom was, the custom in those days was that they would kill or shecht, depending on Jewish or not Jewish, the rams that couldn't give birth to offspring. So basically, it wasn't that they ate, you know, a large amount because they could produce many more babies. And what happened was, that's what they would eat. Yaakov Avinu said, I was so religious, I was so strict, I didn't even do that either. I didn't eat the rams, I didn't have cause any miscarriages to your house.
What he ate?
Huh?
What he ate?
Salami sandwiches. What did he eat? I don't know what he ate. What
is vegetarian?
Maybe he had his own cattle. Today, what? I don't know what he ate.
Dry salami, because the yichest a bit dry.
It's dry salami, yeah, because it didn't have refrigeration.
That's right, dry
salami. Beef jerky.
Beef jerky, they ate. Good point.
That's right.
I never brought home an animal that was ripped apart by a lion or by a wolf. It's called a treifa, that was ripped apart by an animal. Anechi achatena, that what was mangled, miyadi tavakshani, you used to ask me for it. In other words, I would bear the loss. To gnuv ziyayim, whether it was stolen by day, gnuv zilayla, whether it was stolen by night, I was responsible for everything that happened. So Yaakov says to Lavan, I don't understand you. You're suspecting me of stealing. Look what type of life I did with you for 20 years. anytime there was a problem, I paid for it, even though I didn't have to. Because it was normal procedure that if you watch, he paid for it. It was stolen by day or by night, it was stolen. He paid for it. Which, by the way, the Mefarshim Lenafim here, if a person is watching somebody for something, something for somebody, I mean, you have to watch it 24 hours a day. Can you breathe also? And the Gemara learns out, some of Poskim write that you're not obligated to pay at night, so to speak, when you were sleeping. And some Poskim write that we learn out from Yaakov Avinu that he did say he paid for it. So we see, but whatever it was, Yaakov Avinu went above and beyond what was demanded from him, as far as, so he's telling Lavan, do you think that I'm going to go now and steal something from you? I had the opportunity for 20 years to take things that I was legally allowed to take, and I didn't do it. So you're going to suspect me of doing something that I was not allowed to do.
Maybe he was scared, that's what he did, no?
No. If he didn't have to pay, you know, he was more religious than the law demanded, so he wanted to pay. Hayisi bayayim, he says, by day, he says as follows. Hayisi was as follows. Bayayim during the day, achalani cheirev, the heat, the scorching heat would eat me up. Bekerach and freezing frost, balayla at night. Batidat shneitz, shnosi me'enoi, and my sleep drifted from my eyes. In other words, Yaakov Avinu is mentioning a lot of cases that he was legally not obligated to pay, and yet he paid. Or he took care of him, whether it's during the day, I repaid everything, was stolen by night, I made good. Targum Yenison, they say, whatever was stolen during the day, he paid for, whatever was stolen at night, he paid for. Whatever it was, he was always responsible for it, and he was willing to pay.
With this law, that doesn't mean that
somebody else
didn't take.
Rachel didn't steal the trophim. She took the trophim.
Maybe Yaakov took it, but he didn't steal, he took it.
The Pasuk doesn't. Well, the Pasuk says, no, I'm sorry. The Pasuk originally says that Rachel took. Then it says, though, Ki Rachel Ganavasam, that Rachel did take them. Yaakov didn't know that Rachel did steal them. There's a difference if somebody takes something that somebody shouldn't come to sin or hurt themselves with it. For instance, if there's a little kid that has a dangerous knife and somebody comes and takes away the knife from the kid, that the kid shouldn't hurt himself. And that's the real purpose why he's taking it away. Is he called stealing the knife? You're not going to say he stole the knife.
Maybe Lavan means that Yaakov took the trophim, not stealing.
He said to him, Lama ganafta selakai, why did you steal my gods? He was suspecting Yaakov.
I didn't steal, I took.
No, but Yaakov is not saying that. Yaakov is saying to him, I didn't take anything. The 20 years that I could have taken, I didn't take. And how much more so? I mean, I'm not going to take anything that belongs to you now. Whether it's your gods, not your gods. Yaakov is speaking for himself. He's not speaking for Rachel, obviously. Rachel has to speak for herself. Well, she never ended up speaking for herself. But Yaakov Avinu is saying, by night it was cold, by day it was hot, I didn't sleep. Why didn't he sleep? The Mefarshim, the Rambam explained, because he was so busy watching day and night. He didn't sleep, basically. That's one reason. The other Mefarshim say differently. Why was Yaakov constantly on his toes, so to speak? Because he was afraid Lavan's going to swindle him.
Well, he had four wives. He had to be someplace. He had to, I mean, be stubborn. He didn't.
Yeah, but he could have slept also.
He
could also sleep. No. Yeah. Very quickly here on page 167, a couple of times in the Seder they've done that. God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the dread of Isaac.
But I didn't get there yet. 1 second. Give me 2 minutes.
You're going
to
explain that?
I hope so. I'll try to.
Okay.
Okay, so Yaakov is basically saying, I didn't do anything wrong. Don't suspect me. This is 20 years that I'm in your house. And here's an interesting look at the difference in the expression between sentence Lamed Ches and Mem Aleph. In Lamed Ches in 38, Yaakov Avinu says, Ze esrim shana beveisacha, anech imach, I'm with you 20 years. In this pasuk he says, Ze li esrim shana beveisacha, this is for me 20 years in your house. What does it mean, li? Yaakov Avinu said to Lavan, do you know that these years are costing me? These years are costing me. I'm away from my parents, and because of this, my son Yosef is going to be away from me for 22 years. So here he says, Zeli, huh? He didn't know, but it's in the Nevuah that he didn't necessarily know what he said. But after it's in Chumash, we see Zeli. What does the Li mean? This is, it's costing me this point, because I'm not going to be able to have my son next to me. Now, there's a medrash that says, what did Yaakov Avinu do at night in Lavan's house? So he says, he said, the 15 Shir Amalis that we have in Tillim, he says, constantly recurring the union of Yisrael. There's a lot of times the word Yisrael in the 15 Shir Amalis. It says, Yaakov Avinu used to say them all at night. He was pashut saying Tillim. He was saying Tillim that nothing should happen to him from Lavan. So he says, I worked for Avaditicha. I worked Arbes Reshana B'shtei B'nei Secha. I worked 14 years for your two daughters. And this itself, the Mefarshim say, Yaakov is angry at Lavan. I had to work 14 years for your daughters. I was only supposed to work 7 for Rachel. So this, again, you cheated me. And then he says, V'shei shana b'tzeinecha, and I worked 6 years for your flock of sheep. V'tachlif es maskurti, and you changed my wages, aseres meinim, 10 times 10. The way, that's the way Rashi learns. Not everybody learns like Rashi, but Rashi learns, meinim is 10, aser meinim means 10 times 10. He says to him, the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, I served you faithfully. I'm your son-in-law. And yet, you cheated me 100 times. Now, the question is, where do we find that he cheated him 100 times? We don't find that he cheated him. We know he cheated him. But where do we find 100 times? So the Abar Benel says, obviously it was, even though Torah doesn't say. But the fact that Yaakov said to him, you cheated me 100 times, means that Lavan cheated. If not, Yaakov's not going to accuse Lavan of something Lavan didn't do. So obviously, that's what he did.
Question?
Yeah.
When you speak of the Shemun at night, you're speaking after midnight?
Did Yaakov say Tillim at night? Yaakov probably did things according to Kabbalah, and he didn't say Tillim at night. No, after midnight. Halachic midnight.
So what is halachic midnight, generally?
Midway between sunrise and sundown.
5 minutes. So let's say today, what is halachic midnight?
5 minutes.
Halachic midnight today is around 1 o'clock. I don't know exactly what time it is.
5 minutes.
Maybe.
1:30. Yeah.
I didn't say that. It's according to Kabbalah, you shouldn't say Tillim at night.
So how is it that we say Kriyat Shema and we have to...
But that's a part of davening. It's not Tillim. You're saying davening. Say Tehillim as Tillim. But trust me, according to Kabbalah, there is no question that it's... And I'm saying this for the record. That if it's according to Kabbalah, you're not supposed to learn Tanakh at night, Torah Nevi'im Aksuvim at night, unless if you learn it with the commentary. But trust me, if it's a question of reading the paper or learning Chumash or saying Tillim or watching television, according to all opinions, on my head, on my responsibility, you can say Tillim. For sure. I will take the burden of the sin for you saying Tillim instead of watching television or reading the newspaper.
What do you mean,
according to Kabbalah, night is the time for oral Torah, day is the time for the written Torah. When Moshe Rabbeinu was in Har Sinai, it says that during the day he learned Tanakh, and at night he learned the oral Torah. But again, that should be the worst thing. The worst sin somebody should do is to say Tillim at night or learn at night. That should...
Rabbi, a very old rabbi, and he asked me where I'm studying, and I told him I go to you on Monday night.
I mentioned many times in the
past. Tom learns at night.
There is a story that Rebbe told, a personal story that happened to him. It says in Kabbalah also that you shouldn't give tzedakah at night. Now, if somebody asks you for tzedakah, you have an obligation to give. But just on your own initiative, you shouldn't give tzedakah at night. That's what it says in Kabbalah. Because tzedakah is chesed, and chesed is day, and gvur is a night, so whatever it is. So the Rebbe told the story that when before he was Rebbe, when he was still the son-in-law of the previous Rebbe, he gave tzedakah to somebody at night. And an older Jew came over to him and admonished him why he gives tzedakah at night when according to Kabbalah you're not allowed to give tzedakah at night. So the Rebbe said, it bothered me. And I went over to my father-in-law, the previous Rebbe, and I told him what happened. And my father-in-law, the Rebbe said, smiled, and he said, the one that complained to you probably doesn't give tzedakah during the day either.
Uh-huh.
That's what the Rebbe told the story over. Get it? Okay.
Can I take my tzedakah back?
No.
Does it make any difference if you say anything for the live people?
Trust me, again, we don't do anything else according to Kabbalah either. You can say till him, he can learn at night.
The eat already went. I cannot take him back.
Okay. Now, it says, okay, Membeis, we're coming to your pasuk that you wanted to know what it means.
Yeah.
Lulei, if it wouldn't have been for Elokei Avi, the God of my father, Elokei Avram, which is the God of Avram, V'pachad Yitzchak, and the fear of Yitzchak, or the dread of Yitzchak, Hayali was with me, Yaakov's telling Lavan, if it wouldn't have been for my God protecting me, you would have b'chlal, who knows what done to me. Kiato reikom shelachtoni, you would have sent me mamish empty-handed. You wouldn't have sent me with anything. So now, as ani my affliction, v'sigia kapa, and the effort of my hands, ro'elikim, God saw, v'yechach amesh, and he proved it, and he admonished you last night for what you did. Now, why does the pasuk say over here, the God of Avram and the fear of Yitzchak? So Rashi says, God does not stick his name, God does not connect his name to a living person. Why? It says in Pirkei Avos, a person should not have trust in himself until he dies, no matter who the person is. A person on his deathbed can, God forbid, think of converting. There's a famous story that they bring down. I think the Me'amleis brings it down in Pirkei Avos and the Mishnah that says, don't have trust in yourself until you die. So Bechal, besides that, there's a Gemara that says, Yechanan Kohen Gadol. There's a person, Yechanan, who was a Kohen Gadol, a high priest, for 80 years. 80 years. That means he went in and out of the Holy of Holies 80 times without dying. And at the end of his life, he became a non-believer. Nasa Tzeduki. Chassidus explains it a little bit differently, but it says, don't have trust in yourself until you die. And there's a story, we told this by the Pirkei Avos class. I remember?
How old he was?
There was, he died very very old.
If you 8 years, he was Kohen Gadol. He began Kohen Gadol in some age.
So he's saying he died, I think, I was 120. Rabbi Yechanan Kohen Gadol. Yechanan Kohen Gadol. But there's Nasa Tzeduki became justified by himself. He became self-justified. Tzeduki, he maintained that he was a tzaddik, that he would live that long, and he justified himself that he's perfect. Because he did that for 80 years. But there's a... Yechanan. No, he wasn't. He's a great person. Now, there's a story that the rabbi was once reading in a book that talks about afterlife. And he read there a story, he read there a din, a concept, that you could be a great rabbi, and on your deathbed, your Yetzer Hara can come to you to tell you to convert to Christianity.
Oh,
see, he's learning this book, he's reading this book, and he said he couldn't understand how it is. He says to himself, like, he would never do such a thing, how could it be? And while he's learning, he falls asleep. He has a dream. What's the dream? That one of his people were going on a trip And they came to him, and they didn't have banks in those days and safety deposit boxes. So they came to him with 500 ruble in a chest, if the rabbi can please watch it until he gets back. So the rabbi accepted, no problem, he's going to watch it. That was it. The guy went on his trip. A few days later, 2 o'clock in the morning, there's a knock at the door. They're selling eggs half price. Instead of $1 a dozen, it was 50 cents a dozen. The Rebbetzin of the rabbi's wife wakes up and she says to her husband, oh, this is a bargain. Tomorrow we can sell the eggs for $1. We can make 50 cents. We have no money yet. He says, yeah, but I don't have 50 cents either. So she said, what do you mean you have 50 cents? The guy gave you 500 ruble. Now, what do you mean? You don't have money? You have plenty of money. He said, what, are you crazy? You're not allowed to take money. It's not my money. I'm watching it for somebody. Once I use it, I'm a gander. If I'm not allowed to take it. She said, what are you, crazy? We'll take 50 cents, buy the eggs, tomorrow sell for $1, put back the 50 cents, and we'll make 50, we'll make money like this. You know what happens. He gave in. Now, next, and that's what happened, Taka. The next day she sold eggs for $1, she put back the 50 cents, and next night, they're selling chickens. 2 o'clock in the morning, there's a knock on the door, they're selling chickens. Instead of $5 a chicken, it's $2.50 a chicken. So the wife says to him, hey, let's go. This is great. You know, $2.50 profit for nothing. He said, what? You can't do it. Okay, they did it. Next night, it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Every night was something else. Until finally, one night, they knock at the door at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're selling a diamond, a 1,000-ruble diamond for 500 ruble. So the Rebbetzin says, this is wild. What a chance of a lifetime. Sell it, make 500 ruble profit the next day, no problem. He says, no way, I'm not doing it. She said, you're nuts. The whole week we did it, it's good. Anyway, he gave in. They take the 500 ruble, they give it to the guy, he's taking the diamond. All of a sudden, the cops come to the door. What's the story? This is stolen goods, and they see every night he's coming to the rabbi's house. So the rabbi is an accomplice, a partner in the robbery. And while this whole commotion is coming around, the owner of the money comes back and he says, where's my money? And meanwhile, the police confiscated the money. So the guy gets a heart attack and dies. So now they say the Rav is an accomplice in a murder because the guy died because of him. So they take the rabbi off to jail. The rabbi is sitting in jail and there's another yeshiva boy with him in the jail, from kid. And every day, the priest comes, the galach comes, and talks to the kid about converting. Should convert. So if you convert, we'll let you out, and there won't be any problems, and just convert, and we'll let you out. So the boy comes to the rabbi with a shaila. He says, am I allowed to say I'm converting, even though I don't mean it, I'm not intending to, but just to get out of here, and then I can go and learn, and spread Yiddishkeit, and do a lot of good things? So the rabbi said to him, you're not allowed to. To verbally say you're converting, you're not allowed to. The boy didn't listen to the rabbi. He told the priest he's converting. He got out of prison, and he took a left to yeshiva and became a big scholar and was spreading Yiddishkeit and so on. A little while later, the priest starts coming to the rabbi. He says, rabbi, listen. No, you're a great rabbi. We don't even want you to convert. Just say you're converting. Just say you're converting, and we'll let you out. The rabbi says, I can't do that. I am not allowed to. The priest says, come on. Who are you fooling? Just say all we need you to say that you're converting to Christianity. And we'll... So anyway, the rabbi says to the priest, let me think about it. And meanwhile, the rabbi is thinking back and forth. Should I? Shouldn't I? Should I? Look what happened. If I get out of here, I can teach and I can learn. And I could be such a good rabbi. Like. Anyway, and he's about to make up his mind that he's going to say it. And he wakes up from his dream. So he realized the understanding of the book. That when the book says that he can come to you on your deathbed and try to tell you to serve idols. So they're coming back to this Chumash over here. So therefore, Hashem doesn't put his name, he doesn't seal his name on a tzaddik until the tzaddik passes away. When the tzaddik passes away, and then you know for sure he remained a tzaddik, so then Hashem puts his name on him. Yitzchok didn't die yet.
He was blind.
He wasn't blind. He didn't see well. But Yitzchok was still alive. And because he was still alive, Yaakov was afraid to put his name on Yitzchok. So therefore he says, Elokei Avraham, Upachad Yitzchok, and the fear of Yitzchok, the dread of Yitzchok, but rather than putting his name on his name and and Yitzchok's name.
Rabbi,
what?
The Kohen Gadol died as an Anjou?
No, he was. It was a dream.
No. He didn't become a non-Jew. No, Yochanan Kohen Gadol wasn't a dream. The guy was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years. Then he became a non-believer. But he didn't become a guy. Stop believing in the written, in the oral Torah. Okay, so he says, if Hashem wouldn't have been there and to admonish you yesterday and to do all those things, so he wouldn't have, you would have still have done what you did. Vayan Lavan Vayemel Yaakov. So Lavan now calms down a little bit. One second. Let me just see something else over here. Oh, one important lesson before we go into this pasuk. What did God see? God saw my affliction, v'sigia kapa, and the work of my hands. So the Medrash Tanchuma says, a person has to work with their hands, as we read in Pekovitz this past Shabbos. When you work with your hands, then you're fortunate for Tevlach. Yeah. So he says that Hashem needs that a person should make a vessel. So a person has to make a vessel, a kli for Parnasa, and then you can have a bracha from Hashem. So therefore he said, what did God see? God saw my suffering. Vesigia kapa, and the way I made a vessel, by working with him. And in fact, he says that what was the key of Hashem's defense to Yaakov, the Rechaim says, that Yaakov endured a lot of suffering. In other words, why did God admonish Lavan that he shouldn't dare touch Yaakov? Because Yaakov suffered and didn't say anything. It's called the concept of the Erech HaPayim, being an abundance of patience. Like Hashem is Erech HaPayim, God is very patient with us. We sin, and yet He's very patient with us. Therefore, we also have to learn how to be patient. What?
Is somebody teaching? This is not Erech HaPayim? This is not
work? A physical work it is. Doesn't mean that get hands.
This is what I ask you.
No, you give Kapecha means working, not sitting down sleeping in the... and asking God to take care of everything.
No, it's not has to be work with your hands.
No, it could be with your mouth, it could be with your feet. People make more money with their feet than they do with their heads.
Football players.
Yeah, well, soccer, they use the head too.
Generally.
Not the brain, though.
Well, I know that.
They don't use the brain. They use the head.
Right, Rabbi?
Yep. Okay. Another thing Yaakov is telling Lavan, don't come here and say that you're such a nice guy, you're not going to touch me. He said, the only reason you're not hurting me is because God said so last night. He warned you, don't you dare touch him. It's not that you're a tzaddik. You're far from a tzaddik, he says to him. So don't, it's only Hashem preventing you from hurting me. Okay, Vayan Lavan answered, Vayemer El Yaakov, and he said to Yaakov. What's the double expression? Okay, the Rechaim answers, Vayan, he answered to, because Yaakov Avinu was saying a bunch of things over here. He said, did you find anything? Okay, he has to question. So on that, Lavan answered, Vayan Lavan. Lavan answered. That what? That Yitaka didn't find anything. And then he says, Vayayim El Yaakov, now he's saying a new thing. First he answered what Yaakov asked him, and then he's saying a new thing. That's the way the Aruch Chaim learns. What does he say? Habanis b'naisai, the girls that you married are my daughters. Habanim b'nai, and the children that they had are my sons. V'atzein tzeini, and the sheep are mine. V'chol asher tereya li hu, and everything you see is mine. In other words, he says, even though I tricked you 100 times, whatever you do have is still mine. That's basically what he's saying. And he says that, what is he telling him now? That whatever you have, you cheated from me. You stole from me. That's what he's telling him. The Sipurna says, all the animals came into your possession by fraud. Okay? And even if I sent you away and cheated you, I would have been right because you cheated me. This is what Lavan answers him. Yeah.
He's cheating by himself, but it doesn't belong to anybody.
Right. Right. The sheep are mine, everything is mine. V'livnei say, and yet to my daughters, ma'aseh la'ela hayyema livnei mashila, what can I do? In other words, they're still my flesh, how can I possibly hurt them? That's what he's saying. He's saying, the truth of the matter is, it's all mine. But nevertheless, am I going to hurt my daughters? Am I going to hurt, they're my flesh and blood. How can I hurt them? Now, that's one way. Another interpretation that Ramban learns, what is Yaakov saying, what is Lavan saying over here? You know why I chased you? I wanted to see my daughters. I wanted to see my daughters off. I missed my daughters. So I wanted to see them. V'atan, he says, and now, l'chad nichrasa brisa niva ata, let's make a covenant. Now, you have to understand, Lavan was warned by God, don't you dare touch him. Okay? So Lavan knows he lost. So he might as well make a covenant. Okay? V'hoya le'edon will be as a testimony, you're the witness, b'niu b'nacha, between me and you. So he says, let's make a witness, which Hashem, according to Rashi, who is the witness? Who's the witness? The only one around is the God. He'll be the witness. Okay. No, not yet. Vayikach Yaakov oven. Yaakov took a stone. Vayimimeh matzev, and he made it as a monument. Okay. Now, by the way, it says over here in the Sefer HaYashar that even though they made the covenant, Lavan still hated Yaakov and wanted to uproot him completely. We're going to learn more details of this later. But you know, when Yaakov went home, Esav came to meet him. How did Esav know he was coming? It says in Sefer Yashar that Lavan sent his sons ahead to go to... Huh?
I thought he didn't have sons.
No, afterwards he did have sons. Initially he didn't have sons. Then it says, B'nei Lavan. Okay. Later, after Yaakov came, Lavan had sons.
Not the grandchildren.
Which grandchildren? Lavan's going to send his kids to Esav to kill Yaakov? No, he sent his kids, Lavan sent his sons, to tell Esav that Yaakov is coming. And he told them, the guy has a lot of money, I can't touch him because God threatened me, but you could, and you could do with it whatever you want. And the messengers went to Esav, Lavan's kids, and that's why Esav came.
Very nice grandfather.
Very nice grandfather. So he says, with the covenant that he made, he still didn't do anything. Okay. V'yemer Yaakov le'echov, Yaakov said to his brethren over there, Likhu avanim, gather stones. V'yichu avanim, they made stones, they took stones. V'yasu gol, and they made a heap of stones. Made a mound of stones. V'yechlu sham al agal, and they ate there next to the mound. That was the way people used to make covenants in the olden times. They ate together, so that was a sign of peace.
What
was the tree? It says, we're going to soon see. They made a l'chaim together. They ate, yeah, they ate good shechita. They ate good shechita.
When does it say?
One second. What?
One second.
No, before we go further, there's a lot of interesting points here that we learned in a Maimer recently in the morning, but most of the people that are here in the room now were not there. Eda Gal Hazeh, that they say about this Gal, or what Yaakov says in Pasuk Memches, Hagal Hazeh Eid, this Gal, is one of the sources in Chumash of the concept of Lag Ba'omer, which we had this past Friday. There's two psukim that Chassidus brings down, one's in Tilim and one's in Chumash, that's the source of the concept of Lag Ba'omer. One is Gal Einei Vabit in the Flois Mitayra Secha, open up my eyes that I should see the wonders of your Torah. And the next thing is this pasuk, Eid HaGal, Gal is Lag. Now the question is, what's the connection between Lag Ba'omer and the concept of this Gal, of this heap, a mound, between Lavan and Yaakov? What's the connection between all these issues? I mean, there's seemingly, because it says Lamed Gimel Gal, Gal Gimel Lamed, I mean, what's the connection? Obviously, there has to be a connection. So the Rebbe explains in a Maimer, but to say it briefly, Lag Ba'omer, again, that we just had this past Friday, is the Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah of Pnimius HaTorah. Just like Shavuos is the time when God... Just like Shavuos is the time we receive the Torah, the revealed Torah, Lag Ba'omer is the giving of the hidden Torah, of the secrets of Torah. Because the Yartzeit of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who is the author of the Zayad and many Kabbalistic, the Zayad and the Kabbalistic things, the revelation of the Pnimius HaTorah. Now, what happened to Matan Torah, obviously, is the same thing that happened, or what happened Lag Ba'omer, is the same thing that happened on Matan Torah, when God gave us the Torah in Shavuos. Again, very briefly, you can elaborate on this for a whole night, but very briefly, what happened at Matan Torah was, there was the breaking of a barrier. Before Matan Torah, there was a barrier between spiritual and physical. Spiritual is spiritual, physical is physical, they cannot be mingled. They cannot be put together. And like we know, the famous Medrash that says there was a king that made a decree, the guys in the mountain cannot come to the valley, the guys in the valley cannot go up to the mountain. And that was the spirituality, separation between spiritual and physical. In David HaMelech's language in Tilim, Shamayim, Shamayim LaHashem, the heavens belong to God, V'ha'aretz Nasan L'vnei Adam, the earth he gave to people, meaning there is no connection between spiritual and physical. That was pre-Matan Torah. What happened in Matan Torah? At Matan Torah, Hashem broke the barrier. He said, I'm going to be the first one to break it. And therefore Hashem came down on Har Sinai, and Moshe Rabbeinu was told, go up to God. So what happened in Matan Torah? The barrier between physical and spiritual was broken. What happened, therefore, on Lag Ba'omer? Lag Ba'omer is the Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, of the hidden parts of the Torah, which means before Lag Ba'omer, there was a barrier between revealed and hidden. The revealed Torah could be down here, the hidden Torah cannot be down here. That's what pre-Lag Ba'omer. What happened on Lag Ba'omer? The barrier between the hidden Torah, the secrets of Torah, the mystical part of Torah, and the revealed part of Torah became broken. And therefore, David HaMelech says, Gal Einai, open up my eyes, that I should see the wonders of your Torah, meaning the secrets of the Torah. So therefore, what is the concept of Lag Ba'omer? Breaking barriers between hidden levels and revealed levels. That's what happened on Matan Torah. When you have Lavan and Yaakov, so Chassidus in Kabbalah it explains, Lavan, and we mentioned this already in the past, Lavan was a very low guy, very evil. But Lavan means white. White is a sign of purity. Lavan, in the source, is an extremely lofty level. And there is a separation between the Lavan up there and Yaakov, and then there's a separation between Yaakov and the lower Lavan. Now, when Yaakov Avinu is making this barrier, what's he creating? A mound of stones, and he's going to say, "Agala ze'ed beinu beincha." This is going to, beside the testimony, it's going to be separate. What's a mound? When you build a wall, The purpose of a wall is to separate between two people. Right? That's what you need a wall for, between two neighbors, to separate your yard from my yard, your house from my yard, from my house. If you're all together, you don't need a wall. A wall is to separate one room from the next. What's Yaakov creating over here? Yaakov is creating a wall to separate between him and Lavan. Now, to separate between Yaakov and Lavan could be one of two ways. If you have Lavan up, Yaakov, and then Lavan, because there's Lavan in the source and Lavan down here with Yaakov in the middle. So there's a separation between Lavan and Yaakov, and there's a separation between Yaakov and Lavan. But what type of wall is it? It's a gal, which is not a real wall. A choma is a wall. A gal is a mound of stones. It's like a temporary wall. When you build a temporary wall, or anything temporary you make, what is the purpose of making it temporary? Because you don't expect it to last. You don't want it to last. It's only a temporary thing. What is this gal between Yaakov and Lavan? What Yaakov ultimately wanted is the highest levels of Lavan, of Kedusha, of holiness, should come all the way down into the world. And therefore, what did they build? A temporary wall. But the purpose of the temporary wall is that they should take it away. And that's the whole concept of Lag Ba'omer, that the breaking of the barriers between higher and lower, that's the concept of making the separation, the temporary separation between Lavan, Yaakov, and Lavan, that all the barriers should be taken away, and the ultimate level of Lavan should be revealed all the way down into the lowest levels of evil. And that's what the concept of Eda Galazeh, and that's why Lag Ba'omer...
I have a question.
Yeah?
I mean, if the Torah is infinite...
Yeah?
Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, he don't have the full command of the oldest secret of the Torah. He was still limited.
Yeah, but that's why we daven that we should be revealed more. But he had a great revelation of the secrets of Torah, much greater than we have, and he revealed it.
A fractional more.
Yeah,
right.
That's for sure. That's why he wanted to make this wall. What? To elevate the Lavan of evil to Kedusha. That's what Yaakov wanted.
Is it how it works?
If you break the barrier, it works. If the barrier is there in between them, then you can't do it. But if you break the barrier, then the higher Lavan could come into the lower Lavan and elevate it to Kedusha.
Tikkun.
Well, Yaakov wanted it to happen to then. Basically, it's not going to happen until Mashiach comes.
How could God, trusting God create a very pure neshama, and when they come to this world, is in this world that they become evil? Like, his essence was very pure because he loved him. So it's in his action here that he
became very evil.
Lost his essence of his soul.
God knows, but that's not forcing it to happen.
Well, it comes from, let's say, a generation of very holy people, and it happened that... I could understand more if it comes from a generation of souls that are very white, and he doesn't follow that. But can he be created from...
All evil forces in Chumash, whether it's Pare, the Chassidus says, is Peril called Nehirin de la'ela, which means it broken open, ripped apart all the lights from above, whether Esav, which is the world of Tehu, which is higher than the level of Yaakov, and like we learned, therefore you can eat food and sustain yourself because the food comes from the world of Tehu, which is the level of Esav, and therefore we're able to sustain ourselves because in the source it's even greater. All the people in Chumash that the Torah discusses as evil, is because they originated in such a great place, such a lofty place, like we learned, the higher the thing, the lower it falls. That when they fell into the in-depth level of evil, and that's what they were.
So I'm asking, when they fell, is before they came to this world, or in between, or in this world?
I don't know. What difference does it make?
It does.
Why?
Well, because, like, some people say, you know, there isn't me forces of evil that I can't understand. Okay, they can make the tikkun all along, but some people come from more forces of evil than others.
You can have
feel it in their essence.
You can have a person. You can have a person that's wild. You can have a child that's wild. Yeah? Mm-hmm. That child, usually wild children, if they're channeled the right way, end up to be better and more accomplished people than the people that are very slow and calm and so on. Mm-hmm. But if you don't channel it the right way, then they get worse than everybody else. The potential is there to be very good or very bad. These neshamas that come from a lofty place have basically the potential to either be very good or very bad. Whether they chose to be bad, whether they're programmed to be bad, whether they're destined to be bad, who knows how Hashem works. But these are great neshamas. Like you see, great minds could either be very good or very bad. Okay, they can be extremists. There are many neshamas, like Esav and Lavan and Pari and all these things, can either be super great and have an unbelievable revelation of godliness, or they can be tremendously evil. Now, in the source, where everything is holy, these sources are very strong potential of ultimate Kedusha. But when they come down, and they're mismanaged, so to speak, huh? Whether it's the body or whether it's whatever the way Hashem programmed it or it's a certain, whatever. It ends up to be on a very, very low level. You could either, it's like a person that was born in a certain mazel. The Gemara says, there's a certain mazel called madim, which is like red. Yeah? It's blood. It's a sign of blood. The guy that was born in that constellation will either become a murderer or a sheikhet. Or a moel. You know, he's gonna be dealing with blood. Yeah? But he could be a shochet or a moel, which is holy. Or he could be a murderer. No, when he's in the body, then right, then he has the free choice to do or not to do.
So I'm saying, like we ask the neshama, you wanna go and have this function? And the neshama says yes.
No.
Or no?
No. You don't have the choice. You don't have choice. No, no. No choice. No. Because whatever God gives you is the job that you have to do what you have to do. So that's the choice that we have. But we don't have a choice who we're going to be. We don't have a choice to be male or female or to be who we are. We are what we are. We have the choice to do the best with what we have.
Yeah. Rabbi, I have a question, a small question.
Yeah.
Like another word, the potential possibilities in any human being is, it could be in both ways, it could be bad or it could be good.
Right. Every person could be better than everything else in the world or lower. Yeah. So, one last question.
What's still limited, the potential possibilities?
Well, I guess. But we learned with Pharaoh, for instance, that the Jews were supposed to be in Egypt. Pharaoh was doing that particular job. But then if Pharaoh chose actually to do good, let's say he made that choice, then what would have happened?
What would have happened if Lavan didn't switch Rachel and Leah? And what happened if Adam and Chava didn't sin? What would have happened? We wouldn't be sitting here now.
Can you take him?
No. What is